Hello, this is Sue Lloyd, Vice Chair of the ISSB, and I'm here today with our Chair, Emmanuel Faber. We're recording this in Montreal following our May Board Week. So it's only been 3 weeks since we recorded our last podcast, but a lot has happened since then. So there's been two key milestones, publication of the ISSB digital taxonomy and publication of joint guidance with the European standard setter, EFRAG, on the interoperability between the ISSB standards and the European Sustainability Reporting Standards, or ESRS. So, Emmanuel, why was the publication of the taxonomy an important milestone for us?
Indeed, important milestones for, I guess, three reasons. First, in publishing the digital taxonomy, we've delivered on our objective to facilitate digital reporting. And as jurisdictions around the world consider the adoption or the use of ISSB standards, the publication of the digital taxonomy only a few months after the effective date of our inaugural standards is critical to support capital market transparency and efficiency. The second reason is that preparers using the taxonomy will help investors extract, compare, and analyze sustainability-related financial information in a much more efficient manner. And third, we've taken steps to ensure the ISSB taxonomy can help facilitate interoperability with other taxonomies when necessary, and, for example, of course, facilitate the interoperability with the digital taxonomy being developed by EFRAG, enabling all companies and investors to immediately more effectively identify disclosures required by the ISSB. Speaking of which, of course, an important event was the final publication of the European Interoperability Guidance, which you've been so active on for the last 18 months. Can you summarize?
That's right. So the long-awaited interoperability guidance that we published with EFRAG on the 2nd of May. So this is really important because it gives practical support for companies to really improve the efficiency of reporting and to avoid duplication of efforts. So it reduces the complexity, fragmentation, and the risk of duplication for companies that are using both the ISSB standards and the European standards ESRS. So what does the guidance actually do? So companies who want to or need to meet both sets of requirements will still need to read both sets of standards. You don't get out of that just because of the guidance. But the guidance is designed to really make it easier to navigate that by describing the alignment of disclosure requirements and also of key concepts such as how our materiality definitions align for financial materiality, things you need to know about presenting the information in a way that meets ISSB standards and ESRS, and also what to do about reporting on topics beyond climate. And also, in particular, it provides information about the alignment and climate disclosures and what a company starting either with the ISSB standards or with the ESRS needs to know to enable compliance with the other set of standards in an efficient manner. So what does all of that really mean in practical terms? It means that in relation to climate, a company can use its IFRS S2 disclosures and prepare them in a way that enables all of that information to be used not just to meet our requirements, but also as part of their compliance with ESRS climate disclosures. And to do that, some disclosures do need to be prepared in a very particular way to make sure that you can, in fact, meet both sets of requirements, and the guidance explains how to do that. So in addition to those aligned disclosures, in order to meet the European climate-related disclosure requirements, a company that uses the ISSB standards also needs to provide additional disclosures. And those additional disclosures are set out in section 4.2 of the guidance. So you can see what's incremental to the ISSB disclosures. Also, when you apply ESRS, companies need to consider both impact materiality and financial materiality when filtering what particular disclosures to provide. And that's explained in the document, including how that financial materiality assessment is aligned between the two sets of standards. As I briefly mentioned, there's particular presentation requirements you need to watch for, And it means that, in particular, an ESRS reporter needs to ensure that the incremental information that's required by ESRS isn't presented in a way that obscures investor material information. So it needs to be clear what the ISSB information is, really, just to facilitate that global comparability that we've all been working so hard to achieve. Another really important point that's covered in the guidance is what happens when it comes to reporting beyond climate, because, of course, we don't have yet our specific disclosure requirements in the ISSB standards for climate. What is explained in the guide is that a company that's reporting on topics beyond climate using IFRS S1 can refer to the ESRS information that they're providing in order to meet our ISSB requirements, as long as those disclosures are investor relevant. So that's another great source of efficiency. And the other great news is that we have the benefit at the ISSB of already having industry-specific information for climate in S2. We also have the benefit of the SASB standards, which set out industry-specific or sector-specific information, across a whole range of sustainability risks and opportunities. And ESRS allows the ISSB's industry-based guidance and the SASB standards to be used to meet the ESRS requirements in the absence of sector-specific information at the moment in ESRS. So I think a really great effort on both our parts to, really make this as efficient as we possibly can and to utilise one another's standards to achieve that. So as you can tell, I think this is a really great document, a really important and useful document, and I'm really looking forward to talking to our stakeholders about this as they dig into it, because I think it's really helpful to really understand how to apply our standards in ESRS, not just for European companies, of course, but for companies around the world because of the extra territorial requirements into ESRS. And so I really, really encourage people to look at that document. So with that, Emmanuel, let's get back to thinking about this week. So our board week here in Montreal, and maybe you want to talk about what we've been up to while we've been here.
Yeah, thank you, Sue. Well, Montreal this week was great. Apart from tacos and climbing, we were active on standard setting. And it's been an exciting week for us as we started by opening our new permanent office here. We're very grateful to the mayor of Montreal, Valérie Plante, and a member of the Parliament of Quebec, the Canadian minister responsible for the economic development of Quebec, the CEO of CPA Canada, a representative from the Mohawk Territory, Elder Kelvin, was there for their support and their remarks at the inauguration of our office this week. We also had the visit of the Canadian Minister for Environment on a separate note as well. So hugely grateful to our stakeholders in Canada that enabled us to establish our office here. Montreal, with its excellent sustainability credentials and truly international outlook, has already played a vital role in securing the success of the ISSB in our early days, and now we have our permanent office, and that will continue to be a key hub for us. I was also very honored and happy to be asked to open the Sommet de la Finance Durable in Montreal, organized by our partners Finance Montréal. And again, I mean, more than 700 people attending really shows how vibrant this community here is around our core topics. Of course, our focus of this week has been our board discussions, and the sessions this week have on the one hand been about reviewing our decisions around our two-year work plan holistically in preparation of our feedback statement coming in June. And second, very excitingly, about hitting the ground running as we start the work we need to do in the substance.
Boardroom.
In a very new and impressive boardroom, Sue, indeed. In regard to our two-year plan, we will place a high level of focus on supporting the implementation of IFRS S1 and IFRS S2. We place equal focus on enhancing the SASB standards and beginning new research projects on risks and opportunities associated with nature and human capital, as the three activities that are integral to everything we do, connectivity, interoperability, and stakeholder engagement, will continue to be pervasive to all this agenda. The work on implementation also continues at pace, including the development of educational material and running our transition implementation group on IFRS S1 and IFRS S2, which we reviewed the first meeting of, and this group solicits, analyzes, and discusses stakeholder questions arising from implementation of the new standard. So the board had a session to hear a summary from staff on the March meeting of our TIG on IFRS S1 and IFRS S2. I would really encourage our listeners to listen to the podcast that Sue and Veronica did on this meeting to understand what the group is about and the first two questions the group looked at about implementation. Certainly as a former preparer, CFO, I would be really interested in those conclusions. If you'd like further details, you can also read the summary of the on the IFRS Foundation website. And finally, make sure to share your questions with this group so we are aware of the challenges that preparers are experiencing. So we also had a discussion about how industries are classified for the purposes of disclosing sustainability-related information with a paper that I really loved. And I'd be grateful to you if you could speak a little bit about that session, please.
Sure. So this was, for me, a really important session for a number of reasons, but really because this is the first discussion that we've had that is kicking off this work that you mentioned, Emmanuel, which is working on enhancing the SASB standards. And so talking about the classification system that underpins our industry-based disclosures is a fabulous place to start, because that's sort of the whole basis both for the SASB standards themselves, but also the industry-based disclosures that are included in our climate standard. It's also based on that classification system. So it's fundamental both to IFRS S1 and S2 and our future standard setting work. So if we go back in history for a moment, when the Sustainability Accounting Standards Board, the SASB, developed the SASB standards, the board at that time went through a process of developing a sort of bespoke industry classification system, the so-called SIX Sustainable Industry Classification System, which was designed specifically to meet the needs of a disclosure standards system for information about sustainability. And so it's a very particular system that groups industries based on their shared sustainability characteristics, so that that can be brought out in the disclosures. So it was designed to account for a company's impacts and dependencies on capital such as nature, human and intellectual capital, that vary very much depending on an industry's economic activities. And so it's really core to the ideas in S1 as well, where we look at what really matters in terms of an entity's prospects from the sustainability risks and opportunities that it's exposed to. I really encourage people to read the paper or even listen to the board meeting, because we had a really good discussion about why we have our own classification system and why we don't just pick up, you know, other widely used classification systems that are used for other purposes. And it's simply because the ideas that we want to really get to the bottom of here are about sustainability risks, and the system's designed for that purpose. Other systems are designed for other purposes and they just really don't work so well. And so the system that we have identifies at the moment 77 industries that are grouped into 11 broader thematic sectors. And so as a result, building on that, there's 77 industry-based SASB standards. So the board discussed what we should do in terms of this classification system going forward. We looked at some of the feedback we've heard since the board's been in place about the system, including how it relates to other classification systems, what the practical consequences are for companies of using our particular SIX classification system, and what that feedback, you know, should be, what the effect of that feedback should be on our work and processes. And we decided that because the system works so well to identify sustainability risks and opportunities, that it is a system we should continue to use. It underpins our standards, it works well. But we did note that, you know, it's been in place for some time, things change. We're now looking at a much more international use of the SIX system. And so we agreed to continue to use the SIX system, but to be open to enhancements to the SIX system as we look at enhancements for the SASB standards. And the sort of things that we talked about were looking at whether there may be a need to aggregate or disaggregate some industries, whether there's any industries missing, given that the system was put in place quite a while ago now. Thinking about whether we need to provide any more guidance or think about the effects on companies that have diverse or complex business models. And also we talked about keeping an eye on the interoperability of our classification system with classification systems that others who are involved in sustainability reporting are looking at. So, for example, with GRI or EFRAG with the European Sustainability Reporting Standards. So we'll sort of start with the SIX system, and we want to keep its focus on sustainability risks and opportunities, but we are open to enhancements, and we'll be looking forward to consulting with our stakeholders as we did that. So I think it was a really useful and interesting session, and a great way, I think, to set the scene for the work that we're going to do on the SASB standards, and encourage people, as I said, to have a look at that session. So with that, Emmanuel, looking ahead, what have we got up our sleeves for the next few weeks?
Well, if I may suggest, Sue, before I give a more general review on those, and as you're talking about some very important technical work that is happening now, I know you're going to participate in webcasts soon on current and anticipated effects, and I wondered if you could just give us a highlight of that.
Yeah, sure. So as we said, I think earlier in the webcast, one of the things that we are really spending time and energy on is supporting, you know, those using S1 and S2. And so we've got our ears and eyes open for questions that are coming up in the market. And we quite often get asked questions about what actually are current and anticipated effects of sustainability-related risks and opportunities on a company's financial statements. You know, what do you mean? What sort of information might you be asking for? And what reliefs are available for companies? And so we've recorded two new webcasts on that topic, and those will be released soon. And for those of you using our standards, have a listen, because I think it should be helpful to support you. Mm.
Thank you, Sue. And so on a more general way, there are a couple of important moments in the coming weeks for us. The first is IOSCO. So later this month, we expect to publish the inaugural jurisdictional guide for the adoption or the use of ISSB standards at IOSCO's annual meetings in Athens in Greece. That will be on the 28th and 29th of May. And as a growing number of jurisdictions start to set out their roadmaps for using the standards, this is an important moment to share how we can work together to deliver the global baseline. A second important date will be next month. We will be in Frankfurt for our board meeting. We will have a hybrid meeting, so our European board members will all be together with our growing staff in the Frankfurt office. That will be also a moment for, on the 10th of June, our conference in collaboration with key German partners, including Goethe University, the Deutsche Börse Group, the German Standard Setter, DRSC. And so I really encourage you to join us there if you aren't already registered. And of course, finally, and not the least, on the 24th and 25th of June in London, there will be the IFRS Foundation Conference, as every year. We hope you can register to join us there in person or virtually. And I would add that the ISSB will also have a series of specific events as we are progressing in this new phase of our development, with really this adoption phase that will be kicked off by the IOSCO's meeting, recognizing 20 plus jurisdictions that have already started their journey towards the adoption or use of the standards, but also celebrating in many ways and kicking off the new agenda of work for us that we really intend to pursue with our own forces, but also with partners supporting us in doing that. So stay tuned for these two big moments, end of May, end of June, as we continue to develop our mission to bring this global baseline to life for the better of the capital markets and market participants. So thank you for your attention. Great to have you all around this podcast this month from Montreal, and next month that will be from Frankfurt. Thank you. Stay well. Thank you, Sue.
Thank you.
For the latest developments from either the International Sustainability Standards Board or the International Accounting Standards Board, make sure to subscribe on the IFRS Foundation website, www.ifrs.org. If you enjoyed this podcast, please take some time to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast player.